Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, I'm Matthew Appleby, Horticulture Week editor, and this is the Horticulture Week podcast. Today I'm with MD of Hampshire-based Double H / Love Orchids, Andy Burton, the UK's largest orchid grower. Now, Double H, during April 2020's lockdown, had to throw away quite a few plants, but sales have been strong ever since. And Double H has used its Love Orchids website and existing retailers to sell more product. Now, the company's created 40 new jobs thanks to the pivot to selling online. And with a renewed interest in gardening, the return of its wholesale business. Now, Andy, you're quite new in the role. So what's your background?
Yeah, I am quite new. I joined Double H 5 years ago. And before that, I was actually working in consultancy businesses, looking or doing kind of supply chain and operational improvement projects all over the place in different industries.
All right. OK. But you became MD quite recently as well, didn't you?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so I joined back in, as I said, about 5 years ago, back in 2016, and was the operations manager here at Double H. And then earlier this year, took over the role as MD from my uncle, who has been running the business for the last kind of 25 or 30 years.
That's Neil Stevenson. Yeah. So before you were known primarily as a wholesale grower of orchids, but in the last year the Love Orchids brand has really come to the fore. So what difference has that made to the business?
Yeah, it's been a really interesting year or so with the kind of I guess getting into some direct to consumer sales. I think the primary difference last year really was opportunity to get plants to customers when we were struggling to get them to customers through the usual channels that we were used to. So the kind of the most fundamental difference it's made to the business is that it saved a huge amount of plants going into the compost heap, which obviously was great. But I think there's been some side benefits as well. It was good last year, last spring, to be able to have that additional work to keep less people or to avoid furloughing more people last spring. So that was obviously a benefit for those individuals as well, which was good. And then I think we've learned lots. It's actually been a really interesting thing to do from a kind of, you know, learning about e-commerce fulfillment, really, which is something that, you know, we can obviously apply to other customers as well, and help deliver a better service to our retailer customers as well.
So previously you were best known as a wholesale grower, but in the last year the Love Orchids brand has come to the fore. So what difference has that made to the business?
Yeah, I think it's made a few differences. There's been a few benefits to doing that. I think the first one and the primary one really last spring was a way of getting our plants to customers when we when we were struggling to get them to customers through the usual channels. So, you know, ultimately that meant that we saved a lot of plants from the compost heap, which is good from a financial perspective, but also good from a kind of morale perspective. Nothing worse than seeing plants that we've been growing for a year going in the compost heap. So I think there's some good benefits there. It was also good to have some additional work last spring, which meant we didn't have to furlough as many people, which was obviously great for those individuals as well. And I think also we've learned a lot from doing it. It's been some new challenges for us as a business. And I think, you know, learning about e-commerce fulfillment and how to actually deliver plants successfully through the courier network allows us to deliver an improved service to our existing retail customers as well.
Okay. So in the end, how many plants did you save and how many did you have to throw away?
Yeah, so overall, since last April, we've sold just over 100,000 orchids. So they were, you know, you could say that all of those would have gone in the compost heap if it wasn't for Love Orchids. So that's really good. In the end, we didn't actually have to throw many away at all. We obviously do have waste through the year, but we didn't see a huge amount of waste due to COVID last spring in orchids, which was good.
No, that's brilliant. Now, I spoke to you earlier this year and you said quarter one sales are about 14% higher than in 2020, but how has it gone since?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly when we spoke, but I think demand has been strong. Yeah, definitely. I think obviously the April last year was terrible. The demand was really, really low as we went into that first lockdown. So I think actually, you know, year on year, the increase now is probably even higher. So yeah, it's the demand has continued to be strong, and even the demand this year compared to 2019 has been strong for house plants. So I think there's generally a good strong appetite for plants. Maybe as people are, you know, spending a bit more time at home, spending a little bit of money on kind of decorating their work from home environment or their house a nice place to be.
Oh, that's brilliant. There's obviously been big pressures in 2020, particularly importing young plants from Europe post-Brexit. How have you managed to cope with that? I mean, as a British grower, have you seen Brexit more as an opportunity or as a challenge?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a sort of, I guess it depends. Who you ask. But I think, we see it as an opportunity and as a benefit. It has, you know, as you say, the first half of this year has been extremely challenging from a supply chain perspective and an import perspective. So importing young plants and also, you know, we do trade plants as well as the ones we grow ourselves here. So importing those plants from the Netherlands has been very challenging from an admin perspective, doing all the kind of phytosanitary checks, customs clearances, etc., etc. It has created a significant amount of extra admin and therefore cost. So it's been quite kind of painful and quite challenging over the last few months. But actually, overall, we feel like we're in a good, strong position as a British grower. Growing our plants within the UK is a good place to be at the moment.
You feel it's kind of sorted now, your importing regime? Is it going to get any easier from now on in?
I definitely wouldn't say it's sorted. It has got easier. We have obviously over the last 5 or 6 months we've learned how to put the data or get the data through the systems in a bit more of a streamlined way. But there's more we need to do, and there's more that we're hoping plant health authorities will do to enable it to be a bit more streamlined. Electronic kind of transfer of data and things like that would really help us to streamline that process.
Because it's switching from the Peach system to the new IPAP system quite soon. Are you looking forward to that? Do you think that will help?
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure there'll be some teething problems, and as with any new system, it'll take a bit of getting used to. But yes, I think overall it will definitely help.
Cool. And what about further afield, like from China, for instance? You obviously bring in stuff from there. So how has that been so far, you know, in the last year?
Yeah, in particular this year, it's been very challenging. As it, you know, it's been well reported, the kind of the shipping challenges from the Far East to Europe have been significant. I think it sort of feels like the whole kind of global shipping sort of infrastructure is quite finely balanced, and COVID last year sort of put things in the wrong places in terms of ships and containers, and it's taking a while to recover from that. So same as everyone that imports from the Far East, we've been having to absorb significantly higher prices for shipping containers from China, and also, you know, long delays as well. So yeah, that has been really challenging, especially trying to bring in our kind of ceramics and packaging in time for events like Mother's Day and things this year has been really difficult.
You mentioned pricing. Now, what sort of price pressure are you feeling at the moment, and absorbing it or passing it on? How do you deal with all that?
Yeah, I mean, the cost inflation is it feels like it's coming from all angles. We've just talked about kind of Brexit and importing young plants and plants from the EU, the extra admin and phytosanitary checks and things like that on there. We've got big shipping cost increases from China. You know, it's well reported that getting a container from China is often over $10,000 now, where it used to be less than $2,000. So big inflation there. I think there's going to be, you know, there's also been inflation in other materials, including cardboard, for example. Cardboard boxes have gone up significantly. And I think the next big one that's going to be coming is labour. You know, it's a fair bit of publicity at the moment around kind of vacancies and kind of unemployment, and also the lack of our inability to recruit and bring labour from the EU now. So there's definitely going to be some inflation, I'm sure, in labour costs as well. So I think we're under pressure, definitely, from it feels like all angles. And at the moment, yeah, I mean, we're going to have to, as always, we have to do what we can to mitigate that inflation.
So Andy, how do you absorb that price pressure?
Yeah, we have to work hard to mitigate it as much as possible, really. So we have to look for ways to develop and innovate products and product design and processes and improve our efficiency as much as possible to mitigate those price increase or cost increases, and we have to work with our customers to do that.
And what about labour? Earlier this year, you were talking about the MDS management scheme, but labour more generally, do you see that as a bit of an impending issue on the horizon?
I think it is, yes. It's widely reported in the press, isn't it, around the kind of unemployment and vacancies at the moment, and also our lack of our inability to be able to recruit labour from the EU now. So I think it is going to be an increasing challenge to find the quality and quantity of labour required in the industry. So we are looking at that, and how do we what do we need to do as an employer to be an attractive option to make sure that we can retain the labour that we need.
How do you go about that?
Yeah, it's difficult. I think we're fortunate compared to producers who need a huge amount of seasonal labour. We're lucky that we actually, all of our employees are on permanent contracts. So that's good. That's attractive for people looking for a job compared to just a seasonal kind of short-term contracts. So things like that, and obviously looking at, you know, other benefits that we can provide our employees, and just how do we make it a good place to work where people want to stay, and also where they want to tell their friends about, and hopefully, you know, bring in some other people as well.
Have you had enough labour for this year?
So far, yes, we have, yeah.
Oh, that's good news. Now, another big issue been on the horizon all year is the end of the AHDB Horticulture Board and Levy. And I know Double H has been involved in that through Howard Brame. So what's your view on the future of R&D post-AHDB?
It's difficult to know where it's going to go and what's going to happen. We would have liked the AHDB to continue with some reforms, but we would have liked it to continue to be able to carry on doing the, you know, the R&D work that we feel as a grower is valuable, especially around pesticides and things like that, which we need as an industry. Otherwise, we're going to get left behind. So we are, as a business, we're disappointed that it's going to go, and we're looking forward to seeing what's next and how do we keep those things going so that we don't get left behind compared to other countries.
So in an ideal world, what would you like to see post-AHDB?
It's a good question. As I just said, I think, you know, we actually supported the AHDB and the reforms that they were looking to put in place to be more focused, probably a bit leaner in terms of spending, maybe a bit more kind of a bit more of a regular review of priorities with levy payers to really make sure that the levy is being spent on the most value adding activities. So I think, you know, it's something along those lines, really, but it's obviously going to have to be significantly, or, you know, it's going to have to be different enough that it's not just an exact copy of what we had before.
Yeah, so you're willing to pay into a new type of R&D sort of mechanism, I guess.
We are, yes. I mean, we either have to pay into some sort of central mechanism, levy type mechanism, or we have to spend a lot of money ourselves on R&D and external kind of external agencies and things to be able to help us do that. So I don't think there's going to be it's not going to suddenly be a big cost saving. It's just actually sometimes it's better to be in a group doing that work, and it's actually more cost effective to do things as a group. So that's the stuff that I think, you know, we're keen to see carrying on in some form or another, so that we get the collective benefit of being in a group as opposed to just all doing everything individually.
Okay, and the AHDB did a fair bit of work on peat. Where are you on that in the business?
Well, we've been actively involved with that work. As you said, Howard has been leading on that from our side, and has been involved with that project with the AHDB for the last few years. We've been actively working on this for a while in terms of how do we reduce peat usage in our crops. We're actively, you know, trialing new composts and new mixes to see if we can see what results we get, really, with the aim, same as everyone else, with the aim to reduce peat usage.
Have you got a percentage target in a certain number of years?
We don't have a specific target at the moment, no. I think it's going to be different for different crops. We're making good progress with chrysanthemums. We've reduced peat usage in chrysanthemums by a significant amount. Most of the compost we're using is a fairly low percentage of peat now there. But with roses, for example, it's much, much more difficult to get the quality of plant that obviously we're looking for. So it's it varies by crop, and we don't have a specific target at the moment.
Do you see enough product in the market to fill that peat gap?
There are products in the market, but it comes back to the usual challenge of cost as well. And some of the alternatives are significantly more expensive at the moment. So I think there's, you know, as with all of these things, that the balance will start to shift, I'm sure. The cost balance will start to swing in the other direction, and it will become commercially viable.
Now, on to the fun subject of returning to office work. We're in our office going to go back in September, I think, a bit, but having been away for over a year, do you think that will have an impact on people buying houseplants who won't be working at home anymore? Or will it not? I mean, maybe it's got into their psyche that, you know, more houseplants are a good thing whether you're at home or not.
Well, hopefully, yeah. It's really hard to predict, isn't it? It's difficult to know what you know, how people's behaviour is going to change. It's difficult to know really even how many people are going to go, you know, back into the office full time, or is there going to be a lot more kind of hybrid models around. Yeah, I mean, people can have a plant on their desk at work as well, so that's fine by us. So it's very difficult to predict. I hope that some people have, you know, have kind of seen the benefits and enjoyed having plants at home over the last year, and will continue to do that as a new hobby, or as just something nice to look at when they're at home.
I like that idea of having an orchid or whatever on your desk at work. That would brighten the day up a bit. Now, does that mean you're going to increase production? Have you got plans to up your production in the next year?
So we haven't got any specific plans to increase our size of our glasshouses in the near term, but we are able to increase our output within our existing facility slightly. So we are increasing our orchid production. We're also shifting our orchid production over to a higher proportion of what we call mini orchids, as opposed to the large orchids. So that shifting the kind of ratio from large to small slightly means that we can obviously fit more in the glasshouse. So there will be more plants available.
Are there any other trends in the market in terms of what you're going to grow and expecting from the public in terms of demand?
Another big trend recently in houseplants has been foliage and green plants. It's sort of a bit of a back to the plants that were popular in the kind of 70s and 80s. So those have really taken off over the last year or two. So we are looking at, you know, looking at starting to grow some of those plants as well here.
Oh yeah! Oh, brilliant! Oh well, I look forward to seeing that on the horizon. Now, just lastly, talking plants. If you were stuck on a desert island, Andy, what plant would you take? You can only choose one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. It's not very practical in terms of providing any sort of food or shelter or anything. But I think I've got to say an orchid, haven't I? Being here with all these orchids around me, so yeah, it'd be nice to look out on a desert island and provide a bit of colour amongst all the sand.
Oh, that's brilliant, Andy. So we love orchids, whether you're at home in Hampshire or on a desert island or wherever you are in the world. Love an orchid, brilliant. Okay, well, that's been great. Thanks very much for that, Andy. I'm Matthew Appleby, and I've been with Andy Burton of Double H Nurseries. Thanks for listening to the Horticulture Week podcast. Make sure you never miss one. Subscribe to or follow Horticulture Week podcasts via Apple iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast platform. Goodbye till next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.